So you did.
Right.
Wow, I like that.
I did. I tried. Well, you know, this was during 2014. So this was a while ago. But I wish now. I hear he still is. But welcome to Neo Soulville. Welcome to Neo Soulville with me, Tanya Dyson, here on WYXR 91.7 FM. I am in here with one of my faves. Look, and her self-proclaimed Memphis niece is sitting here with the Carla Thomas.
The.
So, of course, we've been here talking offline. You know, that was Lil Beaver with I Can Dig It, Baby. I was talking about how, you know, of course, if you're not familiar with Lil Beaver, a lot of people know him from, what's the song, Party Life.
Right.
That, I forget what rapper, was it Jay-Z? I want to say maybe Jay-Z sampled it. But, of course, he played the guitar riff in Clean Up Woman, that famous. But, yeah, right from Arkansas, you know, so you never know, like, the impact of music. And that's a way older song, but it feels new.
But, you know, what amazes me is that how cultures emerge. He's from Arkansas. They were down there in Florida.
Right.
And Daddy was a little bitty little thing singing on talent shows.
Right.
And in fact, I was telling Tanya that her brother, his last name, he was a Norris.
Yeah.
But he played with King Curtis. And we did a show together when he did the Soul Memphis Soul Stew.
Yes.
He came here and did that session. And he was telling... and. This young man who played drums named Norris, he said, I got a little sister that's going to be coming out with the record, and she sings all your songs, Gee Whiz, and wins talent shows already.
Right.
And when girls can't do what the guys do,
yeah.
Then she said, no. And I said, that's her, Betty Wright.
Yes, you know? Yes,
so,
yes.
So just an exciting time to hear. To come back and hear Lil Beaver play, because he is a dynamite artist.
Indeed, indeed. It definitely deserves every ounce of, you know, be it delayed, you know,
that's
from
right.
The time he did, but deserves every ounce of recognition that,
that's
he,
right.
That he's getting.
That's true.
So, Miss Carla.
Yeah.
You're often called the Queen of Memphis Soul. So, when you look back at your journey, what does that title mean to you?
Well, in the beginning, I was a little, you know, I was so in awe. I never thought of myself as queen. I just love music. I grew up with all kinds of music. And for that to stick, because I thought that was a little overwhelming, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of recognized as that.
Yeah.
Because we grew up, my mother was a member of New Salem 4th Street, which was C.O. Franklin's church.
Yes.
And so she knew Aretha when Aretha was a little girl. And how Aretha would sing her little songs and then her daddy would preach.
Right.
So, I mean, I always figured the real queen of soul, period, was Aretha Franklin. So when they decided they wanted to do this album with Otis Redding, The King and Queen, I felt kind of weird about that, you know, because I didn't want competition. I knew we were both from Memphis.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, well, people have accepted her from Detroit. Maybe I could go along with that because it was on a card, like King of Hearts and Queen of Hearts. So I said, maybe we can get away with that. But in my soul, I always felt Aretha was the real queen of soul. And sometimes people get it mixed up when they're announcing me. And I have to kind of say, wait, no, it's Memphis sound.
Right.
The Memphis sound. So to keep Memphis on the map and... That's what they decided. It was like the queen. And when Otis passed away, I had an album called The Queen Alone. And it just kind of stuck when we were doing albums more than anything else. So people started. I went down here on the river and took a bunch of pictures with the Memphis Queen ship, you know. And so the crew, we went up and down the cruises. So it just... It became kind of normal for me to be, I accepted it. I said, it's a little thing. People remember that. And it's something to introduce me as. So I felt okay with it.
Great, great. Because it is your title, Queen of Memphis.
Thank you.
So you started young, like recording Gee Whiz at what, 15?
Well, I wrote Gee Whiz when I was 15.
Okay.
And... it was just, I wrote all the time. I wrote short stories and I would show them to my English teacher. And one day, I think what had started happening was American Bandstand had just started coming on TV with Dick Clark.
Yeah.
And I would run home from school just so I could be there by 3 o'clock when the American Bandstand would come on. And for some reason, I began to do more musical writing after listening and hearing all the stuff I would hear on WDIA. He's playing, there's Jackie Wilson, there's all these people that he was bringing on, Chubby Checker. And I wonder if young people have ever heard of these people. But to us, they were like so exciting to see a black entertainer on American Bandstand. So that was just, I was just in the 10th grade, 15. So I began to write more musical stuff than prose. So gee whiz, one day the melody just came to me, not the lyrics. And then all of a sudden, the lyrics came. I was through in about half an hour.
Oh, wow.
And that became the first hit record out of what was then Satellite. It wasn't Stacked yet.
Well, okay, with Satellite.
With Satellite.
Okay.
And it got to be a top 10 record because they hooked up with Atlantic Records. And Atlantic Records at that time had sent a promotional guy down here, and he went straight to WDIA because that's Ray Charles' promotion guy.
Right.
And so he took the record then that was on Satellite, which we didn't know was going to be a hit record because it wasn't what they used to call the mom and pop station.
Yeah.
You press up 100 and send them to the record shops.
Right.
And then they would play them at parties and different things and hope that kids would like it and buy up that 100. But by Tom Dowd, who was the promotion man for Ray Charles going to WDA and to Dad, he took the record. He said, well, what's going on down here? So Jim had just, you know, recently had bought that thing and bought the, it was a movie studio.
Yeah.
And he bought it and made it Satellite Records. So it came out on Satellite. And so when the promotion for Ray took that record back, he took it straight to Jerry Wexler, who was president of Atlantic Records at the time. And he said, oh, I like that. Because Dad and I had already done Cause I Love You as a duet.
Right.
And it was on the subsidiary label, which was called ATCO. And there were a lot of artists, I think, with Atlantic were on ATCO at the time. But when Jerry heard Gee Whiz, he said, he called and asked, Dad, I think your daughter has a hit record. And he wanted to talk with Jim again. I want to put this one on our major label, which is Atlantic.
Mm.
And so now we have a distributor for Gee Whiz. And through that, it went all overseas, it went everywhere, and I was just flabbergasted because I was at TSU by then, you know. So that was 2 years after I had written it.
Right.
That's another whole hour because it was a tape, you know, those fun tapes you make when they the big old tape recorders that you have on the floor with the round, mm-hmm. around. So my father had taken it and I didn't even know it. He didn't even tell me that he thought I could sing or he could do anything. He just got in there one day and said, play that song I heard you writing. Took it and sent it to Curtis Mayfield's place in Chicago 2 years later. Because Curtis had said, she's too young. She doesn't want to be out there on the road. She's in school. So Dad didn't figure, when I got ready to leave, Jim wanted to do one on Dad, do right. one on me.
Right.
Because really, at that time, we were the only ones he had.
Yeah.
So I said, I don't have anything. He said, well, let me check out something. And he called Curtom. Do you know they still had it? That's why I know it was a spiritual journey, the opening of Stax Records, what is now Stax Records, because of the way things progressed along the lines. Then little kids started coming. They heard it was a recording company. I remember little Carl Cunningham had a little shoe stand pretending that he was going to shine shoes when he really wanted to get in there on the drums, you know, like Al Jackson. So I'm just saying, he sent the tape back like Dad had sent it. He said, I listened to it and I like it, but I don't think she wants to. She's just in the 10th grade, you know. But now kids very young are recording. I mean, it's not like back in the old days. So when he sent it back, Jim said, well, I don't know who's gonna be on it. And so we got, back in those days, Howard Grimes was just 14 years old. Oh, I think Howard was on the drums. He later became part of High Rhythm.
Right,
went over
right.
to Willie Mitchell. And so we shared a lot of that back and forth.
It was practically the same neighborhood.
Same neighborhood. In fact, they weren't that familiar with having the echo come out of people who used to hear early Stax records. I know where you cut that. That's cut in Stax because of the echo.
Right.
But it became like almost like a signature thing because you could tell that where it was recorded. So we had to go back and forth over to High, which is now Royal.
Yes.
And he let us use some of his expertise as far as the board.
Yes.
And we went back and finished it over at Satellite, which was then Satellite.
Right. Awesome.
So it was weird. So when I found out that it was the first overseas tour, because I had to plan with my agency, because I didn't want to leave college.
Right.
So my agency worked with me, which I thought was amazing. He said, well, you can do spring break, you can do Thanksgiving, you can do Christmas, and all these things. So I was able to work the whole time I was at TSU and graduated on time with my class, by the way.
Right.
But the first place I went was Hamburg.
Mm.
And they sent Atlantic. By this time, Atlantic was with, was our distributor.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent an interpreter with me. And I was doing German TV and newspaper articles. And by the time I was 18, I was doing the Brooklyn Paramount Theater, the Apollo. And so those first, that the historical part of Stax, a lot of people don't know.
Right.
It was amazing what Atlantic, being in New York City, was doing for the label. So some of the first places I went, a lot of the other Stax artists were able to follow, like Johnny Taylor, the Mad
right,
Lads,
right.
came like the Apollo. And it was because, and I normally don't kind of do pat myself on the back for things, but now that I'm older, I see my influence in just being with Atlantic at the time before Stax became Stax. But I know, even my dad came to the Apollo. Johnny Taylor, when they came, Albert King, all these people began to come because the door was basically open. The familiarity, though, between the composer, back in those days, you had to be highly professional.
Right.
They had orchestras that played for you. They weren't like a little band that played on the back of Gee Whiz. Plus, I had told people I had the Memphis Symphony. And it was Noel Gilbert and his kids. It was like three people. But I said, he was the conductor, so yeah. So, but when I, the man that did a lot of the writing for my charts, which I came to learn to take a chart with me because theaters had orchestras. Mm-hmm. And Anzi Horn.
Yeah.
I'm sure you heard that name now.
Yes, ma'am.
But he became more famous later when he worked on Shaft with Isaac. But he was my first chart writer. And because Daddy knew Jimmy Lunsford and all these big band guys, he knew who to go to get charts done. What was the most amazing thing to me during those first 5 years before Stax got their label, how familiar a lot of the other composers who conducted these orchestras knew our people down here. The guy that, when I passed out my chart, later he came to my dressing room and said, oh my God, when I saw Anzi Horn's name, I almost flipped out. We had gone to school together.
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh, I'm in now.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I did the Apollo for a whole week, and a lot of this, it was quite overwhelming for somebody, 18, traveling, singing. And I guess the good Lord just kept me, and I kept right on doing it, and here I am.
Look, and indeed, and here you are today.
Here I am.
So your music continues to inspire generations. How does it feel to know that your songs still resonate with people worldwide?
Now, that is the most amazing. I mean, 50 years later.
Right.
Last year, I was still, when I came back from L.A., I was living out there, going to acting school out there. When I moved back, I began to teach. I was working with my church choir. And, I mean, I learned a lot more about how to conduct and how to put things together. So I noticed that teaching also made me more professional.
Right.
I would wake up in the morning writing again and doing things. I think being back in my roots and being around all the music and the musicians, seeing them again. So it propelled me into being at more events. And that's when I began to see that people still remembered me, still cared about my music, and people were putting Memphis music back together.
Yes.
Like Stax was on the ground, but they were putting it all back together. And they started having the BMAs, the Blues Music Awards. They started having Memphis Music Awards.
Right.
And they started doing all these things that brought Memphis back into the forefront. And so, but before all this happened, and I was constantly a part of all these things. So, but before that, I was going, and different younger people, I was meeting more of the young composers. I did things at the Shell with Alan Balter,
yeah.
Now, who was the composer. And I met so many different type of genres. And I said, well, I grew up with country and
right.
And all of this. So, the lady who lived next door to me taught the little kids in the neighborhood. We had a lot of philanthropists
yeah.
where I grew up. But I could hear classical music through the wall.
Oh.
And she like Madame Butterfly and all this stuff. And so I was confronted with all kinds of music. So I think that interest propelled me into going to a lot of different events that involved all kinds of music.
Right, right.
So I was meeting all kinds of people. And then I saw other people I grew up with at these places.
Right.
So I was becoming more familiar with them. And then they were happy I was back in Memphis. And so, but what has happened as far as what excited me last year, I can't remember the name of the elementary school right now, but someone invited me, a friend of mine said, one of the teachers of one of their grandchildren. I said, oh God, I'm a grandmommy. But anyway, but I was proud of that, you know, whatever. She said, we made you almost like Beyonce over here. So when you come over here and sing Gee Whiz, it's Christmas, you better have some sparkle or something on.
Some sequins or something.
Yeah, so that was in the December,
yes.
Before they got out. I found out that that was a young woman who started a competition off of Gee Whiz This Christmas.
Yes.
And she was calling, everybody started calling her and said, I want to be on it. So this guy that was driving me around said, you're not going to believe this. Let me show you this. I was on my way over to the school. Because they had been playing it for the kids to learn on a program.
Right.
So that she's going to be here. She's going to be here. And I said, oh, my God. They're making me like Diana Ross or Beyonce or somebody. So I said, I'm going to really get shy. I'm going to go over there and walk out on the stage. Like,
right,
you know?
Right.
But anyway, on my way, he says, I remember that song myself. I grew up on that song. He said, well, you're not going to believe this. He showed me this young woman who had started the competition. And so all over the country, people were sending her videos, and they had to vote on who did the best, and they would send them a gift for Christmas.
Oh, wow, okay.
Now, you know, that made me feel good. These are like 14-year-olds. Or,
right.
So, and I'm going, I mean, I got to cry. So you got to hold it together, because this is like 50 years ago or more.
Yeah.
So, and how we did that, I was just sitting around in the studio one day, because one blessing that we had down to that particular studio was that it was owned by Jim Stewart.
Right, right.
And we could come in and try to get stuff right all day long. We could just sit there until we thought it was right.
Right, right, right.
And it wasn't like we do a tape and come back and overdub because they hadn't gotten there yet. So I was sitting there, and I have to get the record myself to figure out who wrote with me, because someone was sitting there with me, and we just were throwing out things. Right. I ought to have a Christmas record. So I'll say, should it be a cover record? Or they said, nah, let's just write something.
Right.
So I said, well, and I thought it was going to be a joke. I said, well, let's put Gee Whiz in it so they'll know it's me. Right. And it ends up Gee Whiz.
It's Christmas, right.
Yeah. So that's, but to know that, like an answer to your question, is just, to me, it's most amazing. And people I see on the street, wherever I, oh, Carla, I know I'm going to hear your record this Christmas.
Right.
And some of these people are as old as I am. And, you know, and then the young ones and then the school kids and the teachers that keep it going.
Right.
It just makes me feel wonderful.
And not to mention, like, the DJs and hip hop, you know, and being sampled in hip hop.
Yeah, like Tramp.
Yeah. You know, we were just saying that long conversation we had at Central Station with DJ Spinner and Kenny Dope and everyone. Right.
That was a good night. They were so enamored by you. That was a good night. That was a good, coming from G-Pac to the Central Station to see this board they had. It was just fabulous.
Right. And, you know, of course, Spinner will be coming next week.
Oh, wow.
And he asked about you.
I got to see him again. I got to see him again. He's so enthusiastic about Memphis music.
He is.
It's so great.
Yes, it's so. We talked a lot about the youth, and of course, with you being young yourself, Memphis is experiencing a resurgence of music culture right now. So what advice would you give to young artists carrying the torch forward?
Try to be as original, like Gee Whiz, I wrote. And I'm noticing that that's the record. That's the record that propelled me into, 5 years of success.
Right.
And I know that it was a spiritual journey because one little record has taken me halfway around the world.
Yes, ma'am.
And it encouraged me to keep writing. And to keep recording, because I, you know, going to college and finishing, I really wasn't sure how long that was going to last. And people were saying, well, you know, we don't know. But when I kept singing, kept going to the shows, kept showing up. I mostly, back in those days, the theater was the big thing.
Right.
The Regal in Chicago, Uptown in Philadelphia.
Right.
And there were black radio stations popping up everywhere because WDIA, you know, was the first.
Right.
So things were following WDIA, and record companies were having more R&B divisions. You know, people were coming out. James Brown was already out pulling everybody in. So after that, so I began to really understand the business a little bit better. At first, it was just whatever. Hey, I'll go. I'll just go.
Right.
I'll be. But also know in your heart, ask questions. That's what I would tell them. Ask questions about your own. When you're young, you're not quite sure. You know you're gifted or talented. You want to share that gift. But there's two words. Show. And what's the next one? Business.
Yes. Show business.
So the people, I found out that the very successful, like Jay-Z and Beyonce and all these people who can establish their own labels and establish, they seem to be the more accepting because they started out in the discos. They started out with We the People, right?
Right, right.
So, and just the mere fact that I wrote Gee Whiz, when I was in the 10th grade, that thing has a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't get a chance to record it till 2 years later, still, you know, for someone to keep it, send it back, to have it. And don't forget the spiritual part of your life.
Right.
You know, don't give that part away. That's my advice.
Indeed. Protect it with everything that you have.
That's the soul. That's where soul music comes from.
Exactly.
I mean, not that you're following a genre of soul music. It's just your soul is whatever you put into what belongs to you, and you should protect it.
Yes, ma'am. And you know, of course, I can talk to you all day. Look, I was like, I'm looking at the time. I was like, oh, we got a couple of minutes for our show before I start to take over Nervous Wreck.
I just love being here with you. You're just
and I love having you
enthusiastic,
here.
I
so,
tell you.
Of course, you know, if you've heard, listen to this interview, you know, October 10th.
October 10th
at the Memphis Listening Lab.
Yeah.
Miss Carla, we'll be listening to some unreleased music.
Yeah. I'm excited myself.
I know, right? Like, we all listening to it and getting right. The chat a little bit more. Your life story is just so interesting, and you are one of the best storytellers I've ever met in
my
entire life.
You know who I got that from, though?
From your father.
Ruben Thomas.
Like, yes, from your father. Like, I already know. I know. And I just love and adore you so much.
Thank
so, you know,
Tanya.
Everyone does, you
thank
know,
you.
And as a artist myself, you know, thank you for walking those paths and clearing that trail for all of us for
thank
in
you.
Every genre,
thank
you know.
You.
So thank you so much. So October 10th, Memphis Listening Lab. You can definitely go to memphislisteninglab.org to get more information about that with the date and everything. And that'll be up pretty soon, I guess, on the website and also social media with more details. And
well, I can tell that. May I say one other thing? I think it was supposed to be today, but there's so much going on right now.
You're
so
right.
We decided to have it October 10th.
October 10th. So, yes, take note of that. You know, not today, but October 10th. So
Right. Keep
note of that and definitely come on out. Miss Carla, thank you so much. I'm going to leave it with this one thing. So what moments outside of music bring you the most joy these days?
Well, you know, I grew up with the old style gospel stuff.
Yes.
And I still get inspired through motivation. I do a little yoga every now and then.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of mix it up. But we have to find the things that really inspire.
Yes, ma'am.
And yeah, I'm like everybody else. We get a little down, but don't let down keep you down.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, put on a little music. Put on, do things. Listen to people that you like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, turn on Tanya. Turn on JB. Turn on the, you know, turn on the TV.
Yes, ma'am.
Find the good old movies that you like. Do something to keep yourself enthused and creative.
Yes. Keep yourself busy.
You
keep
have
your
to.
Mind busy.
Keep that mind. You know, show your mind.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying.
Yes, ma'am. So thank you so much. We'll be seeing you on October 10th again at the Memphis Listening Lab.
I'll be looking for you and everybody.
Have a ton of more time to sit and talk about your fascinating life. Thank you so much for sitting down with me this morning.
Thank you, Tanya.
If you are tuned in listening, this is Welcome to Neo Soulville with me, Tanya Dyson. And I've been pleasure to be here with the queen of Memphis Soul, Miss Carla Thomas.
Thank you.
And so as a parting gift before I turn it over to JB with Nervous Wreck, we're gonna play this tune that we were just talking about. So here it is. This is Tramp with Otis Redding and Miss Carla Thomas.
By me.